Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
School of Humans.
Possibly have Catherine look into the disappearance of Kathy Thompson in the city of Stuttgart, Arkansas, about 2 years ago. Thank you.
On the evening of Sunday, September 14th, 2014, 15-year-old Cassie K. Compton went out for a pack of cigarettes down the road from her house in Stuttgart, Arkansas, and never came home. At least, that's the official story. This is one of those Arkansas cold cases that have become legendary. One of those stories that have been covered tons of times, and yet almost 10 years later, we have no arrests and no answers. We do know a few things for sure. Cassie had been spending the weekend with a male friend of hers named Hunter. They went with his family to an auto demolition derby in DeWitt, which is about 40 miles away. They had a great time hanging out, and then Cassie went back to Hunter's house and slept there on Saturday night. Tracy Snyder, Hunter's mother, has said that this was not out of the ordinary. In fact, Cassie spent a lot of time at their house because, Tracy said, things were chaotic at Cassie's house. Tracy said that her house had become a sort of refuge for Cassie. Hunter drove Cassie home on Sunday evening. Shortly after that, Cassie texted Hunter to say she was going out to get some cigarettes. Then Cassie, who was described in her missing posters as petite, around 5'3", weighing around 100 pounds, with blue eyes and blonde hair, apparently walked down the road and never came back. I have found a lot of new information about a murder-for-hire plot, a man posing as a woman, sex crimes and cover-ups that made me see the police's main person of interest in a whole new light. What really happened to Cassie Compton? And what was she running from at home? I'm Catherine Townsend. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Helen Gone Murder line at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145. This is Helen Gone Murder Line. So we need to take a step back to understand what was going on in Cassie Compton's life. Cassie K. Compton was born in Oklahoma. After her mother, Judy Compton Kimsey, was divorced from Cassie's father, Roy, in 2000, Cassie and her mother moved from Oklahoma back to Arkansas. And there's no way to sugarcoat this. Both Cassie's mother, Judy, and her father, Roy, were registered sex offenders, though Judy's name had been removed from that list after 15 years of good behavior. We're going to get more into those charges later, but for now, we'll say that Roy was convicted of inappropriate sexual contact with a minor, lewd acts with a child, and indecent proposals to a minor back in Oklahoma. According to multiple sources, that minor was Judy's older daughter from a previous marriage. So, his own stepdaughter. Roy was sentenced to 23 years in prison for that abuse. In Stuttgart, Cassie was homeschooled and working to get her GED. Her friend said she was kind and funny, except when she was troubled, which had become a little more frequent in the time period before she disappeared. Her friend said when she was troubled, she could get a little quiet. There was someone else in the home. Judy's fiancé, 24-year-old Brandon Lee Rhodes. Now, a lot of people pointed out that the age difference between Brandon and Cassie was actually less than it was between Brandon and Judy, who was 42. As we said, that weekend, Cassie had been spending time with Hunter Snyder and his family. On Saturday, September 13th, Hunter's mom, Tracy, said her son had picked Cassie up at her house at around 1 p.m. That night, they all went out to the auto derby, they had fun, and then Cassie spent the night at the Snyder house. The next day, September 14th, Cassie hung out at Hunter's. They had brunch with his family. Then, later, Hunter drove Cassie home. Hunter and Cassie left his house at around 6:05 p.m. Her house was around a 15 or 20-minute drive away, so that would put them there at Cassie's house between 6:20 and 6:25 p.m. According to Tracy, when Hunter and Cassie pulled up to the house and Cassie got out of the car, Hunter said that he saw Brandon Rhodes outside, but he said he did not see Brandon speak to Cassie. The last thing he saw was Cassie walking up the driveway, straight into the house. Hunter got home at around 6:45 p.m. According to his mom, Cassie sent a text to Hunter at around 7 or 7:15 p.m., saying she was going out to get a pack of cigarettes. That was the last text that was ever sent from Cassie's phone. Judy, who was on disability and sometimes took pain medications, later said when Cassie came home, she was sick in her bedroom, which was in the back of the house. She said she heard Cassie moving around and said, "Hey, baby girl," to Cassie through the door. But Judy said she didn't actually ever see Cassie. Brandon told police Cassie was only at the house for about 5 minutes before going out again. When she walked out the door, Cassie apparently had her black LG smartphone with her, but no charger for the phone. Hunter's mom, Tracy, said she got 3 calls from Brandon that night. On the first call at 9:14 p.m., Tracy said Brandon asked if Cassie was still there, I guess meaning still with them. Now, this is weird because Hunter said clearly Brandon saw Cassie when they pulled up to that house. Also, both Brandon and Judy told investigators that they had seen or at least heard Cassie at home. Hunter lived kind of far out. It was not walkable. So why would Brandon be asking if she was still with them when he knew Cassie had been dropped off? Tracy said she told Brandon to call the police. And after he called back a couple times, Brandon told her that he had done that. Now, Brandon did not have a driver's license. So he had a bike that he would ride around everywhere. He told Tracy that he'd ridden his bike to the police station to report Cassie missing, but he said police told him he had to wait 72 hours. Tracy called the police the next morning. She said that she talked to a detective and they told her that was not true. They said no one had made a police report the night before. On that next morning, which would be Monday, September 15th, Judy saw that Cassie was not in her bedroom. She started texting and calling Cassie, but got no response, and the calls went straight to voicemail. Judy called Cassie's friends, but no one had seen her, so Judy called the police. Eventually, through a FOIA request, the Stuttgart police did release the original incident report. Judy's name is on it, so it can be confirmed Judy reported Cassie missing on Monday, September 15th at 9:52 a.m. Brandon's name was not on that report. According to that report, Judy told police that Cassie had a possible mental disorder and may have been bipolar. She said Cassie had been prescribed antidepressants in the past, but she said she would flush them because she didn't like taking them. Judy told police if Cassie's mood swings got bad, that Cassie would sometimes go out for a walk. In that report, Judy said that she heard Cassie come in and heard her change and leave from the back bedroom. Judy also gave a description of what Cassie was wearing. She said she had on a blue spaghetti strap top, black and white plaid shorts, blue and gray cowboy boots with a 2 to 3 inch heel. But later, Judy clarified. She said she based that on the clothes that were missing out of Cassie's closet because, again, she was in the bedroom the whole time. She never physically saw her daughter. And it didn't take police long to see that Brandon and Judy's stories had a few discrepancies. Brandon and Judy first told investigators that Brandon was cooking in the kitchen when Cassie came home. He said he'd been cooking breakfast for dinner. He said he saw Cassie briefly, but that Judy did not see her at all. Later, another story came out. Judy told Tina Storrs, a private investigator who looked into the case, and some other people, that Brandon went out for cigarettes on Sunday night also, and that Brandon was gone for quite some time, and that when he did come back, he spent a long time, like an hour, in the bathroom vomiting. Remember, Brandon did not have a driver's license, but he had been known to take Judy's car in the past, especially if she was sleeping. And him going for cigarettes in Judy's car at around the same time Cassie said she was going out for cigarettes seems like a big coincidence. It seems reasonable to wonder, could they have gone together or could Cassie have gotten into the car with him? Also, Brandon is saying that he somehow had time to cook dinner, get in his car, buy cigarettes, then ride his bike to the police station to report someone missing and have a vomiting spell, all in the two-hour period before 9:14 when he called Tracy. In 2019, Kayla Lafferty, a reporter from KATV Channel 7, did a podcast called Timeline, The Disappearance of Cassie Compton. And in that podcast, she talked to a friend of Judy's who said Judy told them that both she and Brandon were given lie detector tests and that both of them had failed. This friend said Judy told her that she thought she failed her lie detector test because she was taking pain medications at the time. At first, it did seem like police were treating Cassie as a runaway. And they've admitted this publicly. Stuttgart Police Chief Mark Duke said, quote, "You think, all right, she's mad, she left, we'll find her." And then it went sideways from there, end quote. Police also said on the record they formed this assumption based on what they heard from family members and other people close to Cassie. But no one saw Cassie on that road after she left her house. She was never seen again in any verified sighting. Even though there were a lot of tips called in, people reported seeing her everywhere from Walmart to random highways, none of those young women was Cassie. On October 3rd, 2015, 2.5 weeks after Cassie went missing, police took Brandon and Judy's phones. Then, shortly after detectives left their home, a house fire started. The small house fire at Brandon and Judy's residence was pretty quickly put out, but the timing was bizarre. By late fall, the investigation seemed stalled. Police were still saying the only official people of interest were Judy and Brandon. But some strange things were happening on social media. For one thing, Cassie's personal Facebook page liked the missing page for Cassie. And law enforcement stated that more than one person had accessed Cassie's personal Facebook page. Also that fall, starting around September 25th, police and the FBI started searching the area that began around the Stuttgart airport. They were looking into reservoirs, riverbanks, under bridges, all kinds of hiding places near Cassie's home. According to the website Find Cassie Compton, the police were considering the theory that someone could have transported Cassie's remains walking or by bicycle, possibly in pieces. They looked for rolled up rugs or garbage bags, but they found nothing. Judy and Brandon started talking to the media. Actually, Judy did most of the talking, but when Brandon spoke, he said this.
She was gone like a whisper in the wind.
I found his wording a bit strange. How does a 15-year-old vanish into thin air like that? Now, this was late summer, so even though sunset was around 7:12 p.m., it would not have been fully dark until half an hour or so later. And yet, not one person saw Cassie after she left her house. There were a few theories about what could have happened to her. Some people believe she could have been kidnapped, either by strangers or by someone she knew, or possibly she was sex trafficked. Maybe going out for cigarettes was code for something. Maybe Cassie had plans to run away. Or maybe something else happened to Cassie in that house, and she never made it past the driveway for other reasons. Then, a few weeks after Cassie went missing, Judy and Brandon broke up. Judy told Channel 7, quote, "I believe Cassie would come back if she knew he was not in the picture," end quote. She mentioned that Cassie and Brandon had not gotten along. After she kicked Brandon out, he started living on the streets. He was arrested for squatting at a property and given a 100-day jail sentence. The Stuttgart Police Department started working with the FBI and the state police. Judy announced a $1,000 reward for any information that would help lead to her daughter. Then, in October, police found something under the Bio Metro Bridge, about 15 miles from Casco on the White River. This was near the place where Cassie's cell phone had last pinged. Police reportedly found objects that included a Gatorade bottle, two men's shirts, men's toiletries, including shaving cream, folded drapes, a girl's hugs and kisses sweater, a teddy bear, and two bags. To my knowledge, police have never confirmed if those items belonged to Brandon Rhodes, but a lot of people thought that the shaving cream might have some significance because Brandon normally had a beard, and when he was arrested a few days after this stuff was found on unrelated charges, he was clean shaven. So by now, a lot of people in the community were fixated on Brandon Rhodes. Police said the same thing they often say in these investigations, that Brandon and Judy were people of interest, but no one was arrested or charged, and they said no one could be ruled out. Hey, y'all, it's Catherine. As you know from Hell and Gone, crime can happen to anyone at any time. When it comes to home security, your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. That's why I recommend SimpliSafe Home Security. Obviously, we cannot control everything that happens out there in the world, but when I'm in my own home, I feel very reassured by the fact that I have a home security system. And SimpliSafe is affordable, easy to use, and crucially, it's easy to get started with and then build on later as you need more functionality. They have a huge variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, with no contracts and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/hellandgone. That's simplisafe.com/hellandgone. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Neither Brandon nor Judy have ever been charged in connection with Cassie's disappearance. Over the years, Judy's opinion of whether or not Brandon could have been involved seemed to shift, at least publicly. In November of 2014, Judy talked to a reporter from ABC Channel 7 about her relationship with Brandon. She said Brandon could be controlling. For example, she said he would always pick up the phone and interrupt her when she was talking to law enforcement. Judy also talked about her past and about the incident that led to her being on the sex offender list in Oklahoma. According to court documents, Judy was found guilty in Marshall County, Oklahoma, of permitting abuse or neglect in November of 1998. Judy told the reporter that Roy, her ex-husband, had assaulted her daughter. She said that she was charged with failure to protect her child and basically forced to take a plea. Judy told Channel 7, quote, "My ex-husband was messing with my oldest daughter, and I didn't know anything about it. Then my oldest daughter told my mother," end quote. But I went through those court documents and I saw that not only was Judy put on the sex offender registry, she was also given a 5-year suspended sentence in connection with that case. Yet when she talked with the reporter, she kind of made it sound, in my opinion, like something that happened to her rather than something she was complicit in. I found out even more details about these charges, and this case was dark. Roy was charged with lewd molestation in this case. According to the court records, the child was traumatized and wanted to give video evidence rather than face Roy in court, which the court allowed. Roy was given a 23-year prison sentence. According to the records I found, by the way, Roy was in prison when Cassie went missing and still appears to be incarcerated. Does this past behavior mean that Judy knew anything about what happened to Cassie? No. But in my opinion, it does show that she appears to be capable of minimizing abuse inside the home. And that worries me. After Cassie disappeared, Judy had to deal with multiple heartbreaks over the years, including one cruel person who actually impersonated Cassie and pretended that she was alive and wanted to talk to Judy. I cannot even imagine what that must have been like. Cassie's disappearance made local and national news, but there were no arrests. In addition to Brandon, because this was a 15-year-old girl, police also looked into other young men who Cassie had been talking to. On September 7, 2014, there was a post on Cassie's Facebook page, actually her last post, in which she wrote, quote, "Let's get one thing straight. I was not with Dustin, okay?" And she mentions a last name as well, which we're not going to mention. So a lot of people were asking Dustin about this. So underneath her comment, he replied and said he and Cassie were never together. He was a little older, I think, so I can imagine him getting nervous if a minor went missing. Anyway, police apparently followed that lead and ruled Dustin out. Things kept coming back to the home, back to Brandon Rhodes. One of the things I found most frustrating about this case is that over the years, we've heard a lot about Brandon Rhodes, so many rumors, so few concrete facts. He continued to get into trouble with the law after splitting from Judy. In 2015, Brandon was arrested on drug charges, including possession of a controlled substance, methamphetamines. After pleading guilty, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison. Then, a couple of years later, he was arrested again. This time, it had nothing to do with Cassie Compton. On October 16, 2018, Brandon was stopped by police in Pleasant Plains, Arkansas. They saw that Brandon was driving on a suspended license, so they arrested him. The officer searched the car, and they found a loaded AR-15 assault rifle with a red scope and a lot of other tactical gear. Later, police determined that that weapon had been reported stolen. They got information that Brandon had been paid several hundred dollars to kill the wife of one of his acquaintances. So they brought Brandon up on capital murder charges. I wanted to understand more about this, so I looked into the court documents. Brandon had a different story. He said he didn't remember anything from the night before. Later, he changed his story and said, yes, he was in Batesville to follow someone. He said that a man had paid him $200 to follow around this man's wife. So Brandon was acting as kind of an unofficial private investigator. Brandon also said he had no idea he had a stolen gun in his truck. But the guy who reported the gun stolen said Brandon was at his residence the night before. The next morning, Brandon and the gun were gone. So it didn't take Sherlock Holmes to figure out who took that weapon. Again, there's been almost nothing reported about Brandon's background. I wanted to know who he really is. So I found buried in a lot of different court documents related to his arrest, the forensic reports that were done. And they had a lot of very interesting information. Actually, I think we learn a lot more about Brandon Rhodes from these documents than we have in any of the interviews that he's done. According to court documents, Brandon was born in Little Rock. He grew up with his mother, grandmother, and younger brother in Greenbrier, Arkansas. But he said they moved around a lot to several different states. He told the examiner that he had a stepfather in his life as well, who was in a motorcycle gang. Brandon said his stepfather physically and sexually abused him between the ages of 7 and 19 years old. He said that from a young age, he was abused. He said he was abused with fists, a board, an electrical cord. He was thrown across the room. And when things got too difficult at home, he would escape to the woods. Sometimes he would sleep outside. He went to school in Mount Vernon and Stuttgart High School, but he was expelled several times for having an explosive temper. He said he stopped going to school in ninth grade and went to work. Brandon said when he was 17, he went to meet the man he believed was his biological father. But later, a DNA test showed that that man was not his father, which I can imagine must have been crushing for him. He also said he had been smoking pot around 3 times a day for as long as he could remember. He said he developed a meth habit in high school. At first, like a lot of people, he said he started taking it to keep him awake at work. Brandon worked several different jobs. He worked at Lumber One in Stuttgart, but he got fired from that job. Later, he did some landscaping and worked for a company in DeWitt, fabricating metal for farming equipment. By 2011, Brandon was on his own. He was living in abandoned houses for a few weeks at a time. That's when he got into a relationship with Judy, and he moved in with her and Cassie in Stuttgart. Now, if you look at his old Facebook posts, which have been inactive for a long time, this seems to have been a happy time for him, at least on social media. Judy is his cover photo, the whole thing, and he has a post there saying that Judy baptized him in 2014. In this interview with the psychiatrist, Brandon discussed his criminal history. He told the examiner about Judy and Cassie and said, quote, "I would not be surprised if someone is trying to kill me because they believe I killed her daughter and buried her somewhere," end quote. I don't have time to go through the entire case, but the case, by the way, is wild. Police were trying to figure out which story to believe, what was going on here. They found text messages between Brandon and the man who allegedly hired him to follow his wife. In those texts, they were discussing the fact that this woman was allegedly cheating on her husband with another man, a love rival. So at first, Brandon and the husband talk about beating up the other love rival. Then Brandon was apparently planning to plant drugs on this love rival. Later, Brandon and the husband also talked about just killing the wife. The whole time, Brandon was saying he's obsessed with the Punisher, Frank Castle from the comic books. For those who haven't read it, he's the vigilante who tortures bad guys and has a very twisted view of dispensing justice. Police interviewed the wife who Brandon followed. She talked about how her husband had paid someone to stalk her, how she'd seen a white truck, the type that Brandon drove, around. Police also found evidence that Brandon called this woman and pretended to be a woman, and that in that phone conversation, he told her that she was a mother who needed to be taking care of her kids. This gets even deeper. Brandon told police he had gender dysphoria. When they arrested him, he was wearing fake breasts and a sports bra. And there are a lot of text messages in these documents where Brandon was talking to this love rival. And in these texts, he was pretending to be a woman and trying to entice this man into doing some very sexually graphic things. It seems to me from these police interviews that Brandon sees himself as a violent anti-hero vigilante. He also said he was never close to his mother. He later told police he did not like women. And yet it's complicated because, according to his behavior, it seems like he's also, in many ways, presenting as a woman. The case continued to get more and more bizarre. Then, in early 2021, there was another very strange incident. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing
right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In early 2021, a video of a woman on TikTok and other social media started making the rounds. This woman had black hair and two black eyes and was in the car with a couple of guys who were rapping. The whole time, she was just looking forward with this kind of dead stare. This woman looked identical to Cassie Compton. People believe this could be her. This brought new life into rumors that Cassie could have run away on her own. The video went viral and people started posting about a missing persons case that was solved by TikTok. The FBI Little Rock office confirmed that they were looking into who this mystery woman was. But, sadly, this was not Cassie. The woman was later identified as Haley Grace Phillips. She was a young woman from Los Angeles who actually made her own video to say she was not Cassie Compton. She said she'd recently been mugged, that's why she had black eyes, but she was fine and safe. Another dead end. Back to 2019. Kayla Lafferty is doing her podcast called Timeline: The Disappearance of Cassie Compton. She ended up interviewing Brandon Rhodes at the Independence County Jail. By the way, Kayla was not able to record the interview with Brandon, but she did record her thoughts immediately afterwards. She said she asked Brandon what he thought had happened to Cassie. She said Brandon told her that he believed the text that Cassie sent, that text to her friend Hunter about cigarettes, was some kind of code. He believed that she had been waiting for someone and that she got picked up and never made it out of the driveway. Kayla said that Brandon told her that Judy was sick and that when Cassie came home from Hunter's house, he said he was in the bedroom with Judy. So now he seemed to be saying that he never saw Cassie. Now, this totally contradicts what Judy has said in the past about Brandon being in the kitchen cooking, and it contradicts what he himself has said in the past. He said he saw Cassie. She came in, she was there for a few minutes, and she left. By the way, that's also a different story than Hunter tells, because remember, Hunter said that when he and Cassie pulled up, Brandon was outside and saw Cassie going into the house. Kayla said, quote, "He was talking about how people think he's a psychopath. He asked me what I think makes a psychopath. He was going on and on about how it's pain that creates a psychopath. I then asked him, are you a sociopath or a psychopath? He was like, what? No. But the whole time he was staring me dead in the eye, trying to intimidate me into believing he's a psychopath, I think." End quote. She also asked him about these very strange murder for hire charges, and he told her a version of what he told the police, that he was paid a few $100s, but that actually he was just posing as a hitman. And the reason he was doing that was so that he could work undercover and be sent to prison on purpose so that he could work on Cassie's case from the inside. Kayla also said Brandon told her that a psychologist had diagnosed him with multiple personality disorder. So in my opinion, interactions with law enforcement and Brandon show a picture of someone who is clearly disturbed and does have some issues. But I want to go back to the court documents, and I want to go back to what the trained professional, the forensic examiner, found. Because the examiner who did a clinical interview with Brandon found nothing like that. No mental disease or defect, no depression or anxiety. They found Brandon was competent to stand trial. No multiple personality disorder or suicidal ideation. They did notice that Brandon's speech was low volume and slow rate, but they said that did not indicate any type of mental deficiency. On the contrary, they found he had very good short-term and long-term memory. Brandon said something to the examiner that I think is very telling. He said, quote, "I am a violent person, very volatile, but I know when I can or can't be violent depending on situations. Here at the doctor's office or court is not a situation where you can be violent," end quote. To me, this signifies that he understands exactly what was going on. So what's next for Cassie's case? Some people in Judy's family, including her son Chris, have said they still believe that Brandon may have been involved. When Judy last talked to media, she said that she no longer believes that Brandon could have harmed Cassie. Judy has said, quote, "He looked at her like his daughter, you know, and if he did, it would be shocking to me," end quote. But based on Judy's past, some of these patterns, we can deduce that even in the most generous and best case scenario, she is not always the best judge of character. And we already know that Brandon's a liar, and by his own admissions, has some very disturbing thoughts and complicated feelings about women. So now we're left with this suspicious behavior, stories that don't match, but as far as I know, no physical evidence. Finding Cassie's remains would be a major break in the case. I don't know how many of y'all remember those topics threads. I know the site has been shut down for a long time now, but people still have screenshots from the old days where people were talking about rumors on there. Some people have made the point that Brandon was into prepping and that he would know where to hide a body.
He actually said in his police interview that he was very into prepping and talked about that a lot. Maybe there's a clue there somewhere. If Brandon did do something to Cassie, if he did kill her, where would he put her body? How would a prepper handle this situation? Did he use his bike, or could he have used Judy's car or another vehicle that we don't know about? Brandon, who has always completely denied any involvement in Cassie's disappearance, is now out of prison. Brandon seems to paint himself in his interviews as the victim of circumstances. But we're about to hear about the other side of Brandon Rhodes, this time from one of his victims. As usual, I found the answer I was looking for buried in some otherwise boring court documents that, to my knowledge, no one has ever talked about. In 2023, a woman asked for an order of protection against Brandon. Now, this is public information, but out of respect and concern for this victim, I'm not going to make her name public. I'm telling this story because I believe it is very important and potentially very relevant. Here is what she wrote in her own words in 2023. I'm just going to read an excerpt here, not the whole thing. This victim said that Brandon has tackled her to the floor multiple times, that he has called her names, that he would scream at her, call her a bitch and a cunt and a whore. She said he has sexually assaulted her, that he has put her in a chokehold. She wrote, quote, "He's told me about his two people inside his head, chaos and insanity, and has brought them out to meet me and belittle me. Brandon told me when we first got together that his ex abused him and that he was getting in trouble for nothing. None of this was true. Brandon has major anger issues. He's a time bomb. He was arrested on domestic battery from his previous relationship where he did the same things to her. I am scared for my life if he gets out tomorrow and comes to the apartment. I'm having neck and back and shoulder and down into my arm searing pain from the abuse. I can provide documents and photos of bruises. He also forced me to put my Facebook Messenger and Snapchat on his phone. He has searched me online and paid for it, getting all my info. I am scared to death. When he gets out and finds out I'm doing all this, I'll be dead." End quote. The order of protection was granted. I have no desire to publicize someone's private life like this, but at the same time, I feel a responsibility to this victim because this man is out there. And if something does happen to this woman, I want the man who's abusing her to know that a massive audience of people know what is going on and that these listeners care about what's happening and will report it immediately to law enforcement. Something that does jump out to me immediately when I read this, other than the sheer horror of this statement, is the fact that this woman said something really interesting. She said Brandon forced her to have her social media on his phone, that he stalked her social media. So we know that he's savvy with social media. I wonder about that because we know that a few days after Cassie went missing, her Facebook page was liking a page on Facebook. I want to believe that Cassie Compton ran away and is somewhere living her best life. And maybe she is. But honestly, I don't think that's likely. I also find myself thinking about that last text, the one that Cassie sent saying she was going out for cigarettes, and wondering whether she really sent it at all. On September 14th, 2014, as the sun went down behind that small house in rural Arkansas, what really happened that night? If you have any information about Cassie Compton, please call the Stuttgart Police Department on 870-673-1414. An alternative number that they've given is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-843-5678. I'm Katherine Townsend. This is Helen Gone, Murder Line. Helen Gone, Murder Line is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts. It's written and narrated by me, Katherine Townsend, and produced by Gabby Watts. Music is contributed by Ben Salee. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, and Elsie Crowley. If you have a case you'd like me and my team to look into, you can reach out to us at our Helen Gone Murder Line at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145.
Thank you. School of Humans.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.